Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's webcast. I'm J.D. Solomon, web seminar editor for University Business Magazine, and I'll be your moderator. Today's topic is Room-Based Lecture Capture Better for 21st Century Learning, and our event is being brought to you by our sponsor, Sonic Foundry. Regular viewers of University Business web seminars will notice something very different about this event. We're live and on camera, and that's because we're using Sonic Foundry's MediaSite player to present this webcast, and we're grateful for this opportunity. Today we're in Ann Arbor, Michigan, at the University of Michigan Ross School of Business. Our host and featured presenter is Edward Adams, the school's chief technology officer. Ed will tell us how every room in this state-of-the-art 270,000 square foot building, from the large auditorium where we are now to the intimate collaborative spaces, was equipped to support the most seamless use of integrated technologies, and in the process became a model of student learning efficiencies. Also with us is Sean Brown, Vice President of Education at Sonic Foundry. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
We'll get started in a moment, but first I'd like to point out the interactive features of the MediaSite player you are watching now. Below me in the lower right, you'll notice a speech bubble. That's the Ask button. You can pose a question at any time during this presentation. Just click on the speech bubble, type your question, and click Submit. We'll answer as many questions as time permits after the presentation. And by the way, if you provide your email address with your question, we'll be sure to get you an answer, even if we aren't able to get to your question during the Q&A session. For additional information about today's webcast, click the Info button on the lower left of your screen. And for links to additional reference materials, including a slide deck, click the Links button in the lower right. Finally, this presentation will be available on demand immediately afterwards by clicking on the same link that you used to watch right now. So, on to our program with Ed Adams and Sean Brown. Ed, tell us about room-based lecture capture here at Ross School of Business, and tell us even if lecture capture is the right way to think about what you're doing here.
Thanks, JD. That's a good question. We sort of look at this more as an enterprise video distribution system more than room-based lecture capture. And I think I'll explain it when I get into some of my slides. I would like to take you all on a small tour of our new building at the Ross School of Business that opened up in 2009. Here's the agenda that I'd like to sort of run through today, some brief introduction about us so that you get a sense of what we are in our school and how our new building became a 21st century building. That was important to us, and MediaSite was a big piece of that. Why Ross relies on MediaSite, why we chose MediaSite, and the growing use of MediaSite today. And one of the most important reasons of this integration of MediaSite in our new building is that this is an integrated solution. It's in all of our rooms. It's part of our infrastructure. It's part of everything we do that distributes and uses video, and that's really important. And then I'm going to end with a little bit of a measure of our success. So let's talk a little bit about us. If you've never been to Ann Arbor, Michigan, that's where we are, University of Michigan. It's a very decentralized campus, and the Ross School is one of 19 schools that make up the University of Michigan, a public research university. The Ross Business School was founded in 1924, so we're a little over 75 years old. We're ranked number 5 by Business Week. We have over 200 faculty, and we have over 3,000 graduate and undergraduate students that attend our school. This is an image of our brand new building, opened in 2009. It's 270,000 square feet, and this building replaced, in the same footprint, about 4 or 5 buildings that were 2 stories, 3-story buildings, and now is this. Where we like to differentiate ourselves in the way we deliver MBA education is that it's a team-based and action-based learning model. And this space represents that model of action-based learning in our classrooms, in our breakout rooms, in the way that I'm going to try to show you as we go through this, how students study and learn. So let's start with the first thing is our discussion classrooms. These are 12 U-shaped discussion classrooms in our facility. Seating is at 75 or 95. We also have 5 40-seat flat classrooms with different kind of furniture that allows modular, mobile kinds of interactions. You can be tiered up. You can break out into team-based pods, go back and forth all at the same time. And this is that same image showing a class with a faculty member up in front, dynamically talking, dynamically doing discussion. The Davidson Winter Garden is a space that all of our students will use as a collaborative workspace. So here's where they're doing teamwork. They're having meetings, discussions. They're using our wireless network. They're using all of the tools that we may do that are collaborative in nature. And media site distribution is a piece of this. There's a typical team working every day. They're in the bottom level of our winter garden. Our auditorium is where we're actually filming this from today. This is our 499-seat space that we use primarily for events, larger classes, guest speakers, career development, and we're even running this space out to the campus. This is a very popular space for us. And I should point out, if I haven't done so already, in every one of these spaces that I'm showing you is MediaSite capable. MediaSite delivered either through that standard podium that you're seeing in the lower right-hand corner. That's integral to our classroom design. It's in all of our spaces here. Instructors are able to use that single podium to get to all of the audiovisual in all of our spaces. In this particular room, they've got an AV booth in the back that's in the upper left-hand corner, that white glass that's in the back row of seats. So we can either do post-production of video in Blau Auditorium from that booth, or we can send all of the video from all of our classrooms up to a separate AV booth and do the mixing. We also have and use a lot of this space. It's on our sixth floor overlooking the city of Ann Arbor, which we call the colloquium. It is heavily used for receptions and dinners used by students, faculty, staff, alums, visiting dignitaries. We also can use this space as a teaching space where we do a lot of panel discussions with faculty. We've got some curtains in there that you're not seeing that we can divide the space. And we've also got this room media site capable. And we've also got this room with the same lectern that's in all of our classes. So faculty using this room get the same experience as every other space in our building. We go up to the top floor again, and we've got our media production studio. You're seeing the green screen. These are for the events that we would normally do for high production, sort of that we want to distribute something on our main website. Take a guest speaker up there, take our dean, take faculty, take visiting dignitaries, and shoot production film. Also has a portable media site recorder. And this is where we have all of our feeds from classrooms, the dining room, the colloquium, Blau Auditorium, feed back into this master control where we can do the multi-camera shoots, very similar to what we're doing here today. We can use a Sony Anycast to produce something that is of higher quality, even including what we're doing with MediaSite today, and distribute that out to the various channels for a video. We were an early adopter of iTunes University. We stream events to our website. It's up on our learning management systems and so on. So why does Ross rely on rich media? When we built this building, a lot of thought and effort and attention went into what creates an academic environment of the 21st century. And we feel that the digital culture that we've tried to create here definitely started what made a 21st century building. Ross was an early adapter of video, going back to the beginning of this decade, the 2000s. Early on, we recognized sort of the value of even iPods and the ability of students that were using, walking around the campus with iPods, streaming video, which is where we got into using iTunes University. We sort of recognized that as something both students were comfortable with, ways that we could get our message out better, and it also allowed us to sort of get our toes wet, if you want, of the processes that allow you to get into using video, whether it's creating school policies or media forms that we have students to sign, guests to sign, ways that we were going to distribute video. And it was this very, very early work with our faculty and with our deans and with our visiting scholars that allowed us to get into what we do with MediaSite today. Third point on my slide is in the later part of the 2000s, we got student teams to start using video in addition or as a way to complement what they would normally do to make presentations that would go to faculty and our corporate boards. So in addition to very heavy text or heavy reports or using PowerPoint decks, they integrated video through cameras that we supplied, through a digital media center that we created, through distribution channels that we supported like iTunes. We got the culture going on here that students were used to using video, that faculty were using these as part of cases, part of books that they were writing. And it is around the time of 2000 where we got into the design of our new building. So 2000 on, we sort of had this figured out that, yeah, we'll use video. Video is part of a 21st century building. And it's, as this last slide says, it's digital media is important. It's a critical in the way we deliver our messages both live and on demand. Why MediaSite? So we looked at a lot of different methods. And again, going back to the early 2000s, we used a lot of different video. We used a lot of different distribution channels. We did a lot of investigative work of, you know, what's present in around the 2007-2008 use when we're bringing this new building on. And what we wanted, what we knew we needed, was a single solution that handled all of our video production and distribution needs, which is why I opened my talk by saying, look, we don't think of this as a lecture capture solution. To us, this is an enterprise video distribution production system. It's available in all of our spaces, not just in our classrooms. And it was important that this be used for all of our distribution of video, all of our use of video, not just a few that we had to go out and find something else later. It must support all of our business processes. That was an important thing. So how we schedule this room, how we decide whether faculty are going to use video or not, all of that had to be integrated into regular business processes. We weren't going to grow staff to sort of integrate or use MediaSite or any other video distribution method. It also had to seamlessly integrate into our infrastructure. It had to support Windows AD. It had to support the kinds of media players, the kinds of desktops, the kinds of players that we were using today. We did not want to invent a whole new different infrastructure to support our video. And we needed to create all this other kind of stuff, like portable media with DVDs, podcasts, distribute into iTunes U, take MediaSite and take those presentations and put them on our regular websites and so on. And most important, and I got on this by talking about how we're doing this with our single lectern that's available in every class, the way we use media had to be a solution that was easy for our end users. It had to be easy for students. It had to be easy for our faculty. No special learning, no special rules, no special permissions, none of that. It had to be very, very simple. And we think we've accomplished both for all of this. So here's a sample of what we do with our MediaSite. And I've tried to do a couple of, you know, corporate presentations, faculty uses, dean uses, different room use. So here in Blau Auditorium, same as where we are today, this is our brand new dean having an interview with our athletic director that we streamed live. And in this particular case, this auditorium was packed. So we had 500 people sitting in here interacting with our dean, our athletic director, and let's be honest, athletics is very important on the U of M campus. So this was a big deal alumni event that we did for homecoming. And we stream this out to alumni around the world. This is a panel that we've done using MediaSite up in our colloquium that you saw as the dining center on our sixth floor. We streamed this. This was our faculty doing a panel on the economic crises back in the 2009-10 era. So here's a a panel with multi-broadcast, multi-audio using MediaSite, streamed out live. This is something very interesting for us. This was something we had hoped for, and you never quite know if you're going to realize this dream without a lot of hand-holding. These are faculty, in this particular case, this is what we've termed learning modules. And it was our goal, it was our dream, vision, that faculty would figure out that MediaSite not only was something that you could just sort of archive a class for, which is a really basic use, archive my class, if somebody misses, you know, I can go back and look at the class over again. Our faculty are learning that this is something that they can use to self-record and self-broadcast out these learning modules. In this particular case, this is net present value, something that is used every day or used every day, taught once a class in every one of our finance introductory courses. So what would have happened before is a faculty member had to take out one of the 16 days that is used for in-class instruction and teach this concept, a very, very basic concept in finance. And instead, he recorded himself out in this particular case using the document camera that's available in all of our classrooms, saving it off in MediaSite and putting it up on his course management system by himself without any assistance from us, and asking students to use this as a pre-recorded or pre-viewing presentation. So watch it before you come to class. Come to class, and we're going to use the concepts, but I'm not going to teach you the concepts anymore. This was really, really powerful for us. Here are our student teams using MediaSites in the classrooms to practice a business plan proposal that they're using for a case competition or that they will be about to present to a case competition. What you probably can't see from this slide is this is students doing this by themselves, using a classroom, using the lectern, using MediaSite with no traditional AV support, no in-class support of any nature. And this is our, for our executive MBA program, we're now using MediaSite to stream out these information sessions that in the past would have been done using something like Adobe Connect or maybe using Skype. But together with all of those, there would have been other technologies. If you want to ask a question, you send pre-canned questions to this address. If you want to watch in a different way, you do things in a different way. And I think we even did some of these where we tried using just something like a Yahoo chat board. So it's very flat in that it was a text-based info session. Now we stream these 2-3 times a year to all of our prospective students, and we get a much better audience. We get it's a much better presentation, much more interesting questions about the nature of the executive MBA program, and we're able to take these after the fact and put these up online so that other students that weren't able to attend the session can watch the session live or on demand, but as if they were asking these questions. So I want to go through, this is the importance of the single solution. So in our lectern that I showed you that is available in all of our learning spaces, we have this, we think, is very simple interface that all of our faculty use. It's a very consistent interface. That row of blue that you see is all of the media sources that are available in our classroom, and one of those is the recording button that we enable or not. So all faculty, all staff, would see that button enabled, some student groups maybe not, the general public that walks in on the class does not, but everybody is able to push that button to choose to record a class. They're not pre-scheduling classes, they're not asking someone from my staff to come in and help them schedule a class, or doing it by themselves. We're also, we're using an Oracle database, which is our room scheduler, and after they push the button to record, they're seeing metadata pre-populated. So they're able to add more metadata. They're able to add class descriptions. So in the case of the learning object that I pointed out before, an instructor may change or edit that description information to say, this is a class about using net present value to blah, blah, blah. The rest of the class, the name of the instructor, the hours, the class that I'm in, the class itself is all pre-populated. So again, they don't have to do anything. And they can simply accept this and activate it, or they can go back and edit. For things like special events, we automatically recognize from the lectern that this is an event and not a class based on time. And we've changed the metadata to have a more event-natured thing, title, audience, dates, times, and then some ability to describe the event itself. So again, with the intelligence that we've built into the lectern, we know the difference between classes, we know the difference between events, and we provide a very easily method for faculty and presenters to know which to enter. And this is the camera positioning. We've made it very easy with presets that they can either zoom in to a lectern, they can record something full class, or they can record it full class showing the student audience if they choose to do it that way. And they have some ability to do some adjustments. That's what you're seeing on the left-hand screen. And then finally, I want to just get into, you know, maybe the question you're answering is the so what, you know, so how do we know this works, which is always the million-dollar question. And it's the million-dollar question for IT directors, too. Here's something that we want to put into our 21st century building. Now, let me show you that it's working. And so there's our pretty steep adoption curve. And I want to go back to the point I made that this isn't us showing up at every class or every event. This is an adoption curve where we've got 6,500 events. We've got over 5,900 hours of media site recordings, good media site recordings, not just classes that are throwaway or events that are thrown away. And we've got 151,000 views of our data in the 2.5 years that our building has essentially been live. And these are all people sort of seeing the power of what this can do with a little prodding, a little marketing from me. This just shows you the steep adoption curve going back over the last year, I believe. This chart is for the last year of, again, where we went from 3,000 a year ago to about 6,500 presentations today. And again, that's pretty steep adoption of users doing this by themselves. And I throw this slide in because it sort of validates, and I hope you can see the detail of this. So on the top, a conversation with Charlie Munger was a very, very popular presentation that we did with over 20,000 views. And we actually did that in collaboration with our university law school, which is adjacent to our building right here. So it's a very collaborative technology. This was done with our law school. We had 20,000 hits on that one. But you can go down the rest of that list, and when you look at the kinds of presentations that we've done, these are events, these are seminars, these are case studies, these are past classes, these are academics, and we're seeing numbers in the hundreds of people watching our presentations. And with that, I'm going to turn it over, and I'm going to ask for questions.
Okay. Thanks, Ed. Sean, I want to ask you something here. You've seen lecture capture implementations across the country. How does the system that Ed has just described compare and contrast to others that you're familiar with, different models, et cetera?
Well, how do you choose among your children? You know, it's a tough question, but I have to tell you that when a company sits down and tries to design a solution like we have at Sonic Foundry and MediaSite 10 years ago, you research, you do focus groups, you vision, but you're talking about an emerging technology that's about the future, things that no one's done yet, so you're never quite sure. And the implementation at Ross from day one has taken advantage of literally everything that we've poured heart and soul into MediaSite. So there's lots of people following along, many of whom, I don't know why, but in this incredibly competitive environment, Ed could not be more friendly and willing to share all of his team, share their practice. So there's a lot of people following Ross, but they're unique in being out front. They have deployed wall-to-wall. They've exploited the core features of our product. They have extended features like that he was showing you with Oracle integration with scheduling, using our API. And so that's what I'd say makes it different, this scale. In the sense that media site services are available in every classroom, the workflows and the production values put them out front in terms of and how long they've had it, kind of puts them in, out in front of the pack. That's what makes it different.
But, you know, we title this room-based lecture capture, and for people who are viewing, let's explain exactly what we mean with about room-based versus other models.
When we designed the system, the ability to take video and have an educator, you know, change their teaching affect into a modality that a student can consume it on their computer isn't new. It didn't start in the 2000s. It's something that's been around, you know, forever. It's been around since Apple released QuickTime, since there was HyperCard, since there was LaserDiscs, which I know you were in that industry before, right?
That's right.
We go way back. So what room-based lecture capture is, which we are proud to be one of the first to work out, is the idea that you build this capability into the walls. You make it a background process. You make it like the other production class enterprise systems that Ed has implemented at this school and everyone else does, at others like projectors and video conferencing and everything else. This is as opposed to handing individual faculty tools and saying, here's your software, here's your WebEx, here's your Adobe Connect, here's your XYZ product. All good things, but you didn't see the adoption curves, the radical adoption curves that you get until you could automate further that process. So room-based lecture capture, in its definition, is about having technology that starts in an existing legacy classroom using the sources and the training that the faculty have to use that classroom, and then they get a digital shareable result.
And maybe, yeah, and if I could just add to that.
Please.
So, again, it takes a while. It takes 5 years to design a building. And in 2004 or 5, we first imagined that we were going to put audiovisual jacks in the back of every classroom, because we imagined then that video would be important in classroom instruction, and we sort of imagined that my friends and colleagues back here would be in the back of a classroom with a tripod and a camera feeding something back to a main booth. That's how we imagined. And you can also imagine that that's a very expensive model to have. It's a staff-intensive model, and it's an expensive model, but we thought sort of that was the way to go. That's 2005. So you sort of skip ahead to 2008 when this building is in its final stages, and we looked at a product like MediaSite that really does take the media and put it in part of the infrastructure so that you're not requiring staff to sit in backs of rooms and record. So we're feeding things to booths now instead of imagining that we were going to stick tripods. When we also sort of imagine that faculty are doing this on their own, so they're using lecture capture. We found some very unique instances quickly, within a year, where that model didn't exactly work. And the one was where faculty created learning objects. We imagined that. We hoped people would do something more creative if we gave them the tools that was easy. They probably wouldn't have done that had they had to schedule one of my staff members' time. Oh, by the way, you know, Bob, will you come to my class and record the session? They wouldn't have done that. They figured that out on their own. But we also figured out, so we have a lot of communications faculty here, it's a core course in our MBA program, and a lot of that is teaching students to do presentations and how to do them right, how to speak right, how to make a presentation, how to stand right, how to speak in front of an audience. And they came to us very early on to say, the way that we had set MediaSite up with this presets wasn't good enough, that they needed to actually zoom in on speakers. They needed to actually see audience members. So we worked with those particular faculty to give them a handheld recording device where they can be in the back of the room, or even students in the back of the room, and they're recording their fellow students either doing full shots, pan-ins, zooms to audience, asking questions. So it's an extension of what we imagined in a very short amount of time. And then the last thing is we're finding that the adoption, and so room-based systems are really important to us as opposed to doing just a classroom or just a lab. And we're seeing it. We've got some what we call the historic building, the classrooms that we that are not part of this complex. And we're starting to see some of the issue where we don't have built-in lecture capture in those rooms. And we're going back this summer, and we're going to retrofit 6 historic classrooms to have media site with the same podium because it's so part of the way we teach now, teach and learn, that having classrooms that don't have integrated lecture capture don't work.
That's a good segue to the next couple of questions, which is about faculty use. So first, how have you gotten faculty to use this? Has it been mandated? What kind of training do you provide? How are you getting buy-in?
Yeah, we mandate very little here. Very little do we mandate. So our adoption curve is a lot of me gently talking to people. I'll go out and I'll convince our director of EMBA to give this a try. And by finding departments, you know, you can find more departments that are willing to give this a try. Finding the first person is the toughest. For the other sorts of technologies, we target things at students or at student interests. So you go to your career center and you say, you know, rather than having information sessions at times of day that we're not available, because you can never match that. They can do info sessions in the day, in the evenings. They can do them on Saturdays. They can do them during the week, and you're always going to find some large people that can't go. I got a course, I've got a project, I've got something else, I can't be there. So media site and lecture capture for that is a perfect use. That gets students interested in it. Students introduce clubs, so you get clubs interested in media site capture. And then, you know, students are driving it up to faculty. Why aren't I able to do this? I should say, to just be fair, I mean, there were 5 or 6 faculty, innovative faculty, that we did work with pretty closely, too. We introduced them to the technology. And we offered them not in-class support, but we offered them a level of support that we don't offer to the general to sort of seed the process. But a very small number of faculty, but it was mostly driven by students.
And I'm sorry to jump in, but I definitely, to your first question, to me, that's another thing that we saw here is that in the design phase, for our part, we were able to assist and support in some very great piloting that involved faculty. But we noticed that there's a unique level of attention to student input here. Everyone does that very well in American higher education, especially compared to other higher education systems around the world, very bottom up. But very much so here at Ross, even in the pilot process, even at those critical times when you're trying to figure out how technology can go together, there always seems to be an eye on the student vibe and how they're feeling about any test that we would do.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
A viewer asked a question, a topic that frequently comes up in any discussion about lecture capture related to copyright.
Sure.
And this question specifically is, have you addressed copyright issues that relate to the use of copyrighted video within the context of a lecture that's being captured?
So what we've done is work with our general counsel on general policies around recordings. And when I mentioned that we also, you know, what we do now is built around our infrastructure. So if we see courses that are specific around the use of using media or using movies to demonstrate a point, we build those around the authentication schemes that are inherent in that class or that are inherent around the learning management system. Can somebody get around that? Yeah, I'm sure. But we know which classes are going to use copyrighted materials, and we put those behind an authentication firewall, if you will.
Okay. This question from a viewer in the UK. How did you get the architects for the new building to allow presentations and recording in every room, given the AV and lighting needs that might spoil the look of the building? We're talking to architects right now, and this is important for us to know.
Great question.
It's a great question. So, and I think a lot of it begins with the guy that named our school, Stephen M. Ross. He wanted us to create a 21st century building. And it was with Stephen Ross where he was pushing us to think more broadly. Again, I use the example of we imagined video was going to be something that we put plugs in various rooms for video and audio feeds. And yet I think Stephen was the guy that came back later on and said, you know, how do we know if we've got a 21st century building? What have we got in here that doesn't have just computers and desks and chairs? And it was through that sort of exploration where we'd come up with video. And again, Ross had been, in the early 2000s, we had been dabbling in the issues of video. How do we do this? How do we, one of our prominent faculty published a book using student videos where they had gone out and interviewed corporate leaders or international leaders and used that as part of his book. So this culture of video had been spreading. So
was there tension with at points with the architects to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, this will be?
No, there was actually no tension whatsoever in our building. Again, you have Stephen and Ross saying, let's make it happen. I don't even know particularly where I would have seen the tension. I mean, there's nothing that we did with lighting in our regular classrooms that deviated probably from what we had already done.
That's what I was going to interject and ask you. Is that what we found to be the case relative to the very good question from the person in the UK is that technology is evolving to favor in-situ type environments.
Yeah.
That you can get more, you know, right now we have this wonderful staff of yours filming us, but the camera technology, HD, three-chip cameras, you know, what we do to encode video relative to media site allows for a traditional classroom to look pretty gosh darn good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to even imagine, so what did we put in the classrooms that are even dependent on this? So lighting, we didn't do anything in particularly different lighting. More focus was on lighting with LEED certification than it was on video.
Right.
So we didn't do anything with lighting that is particular to video. So what we did in the ceilings is we mounted what looked like regular power receptacle-sized microphones, but I think that was outside of the use of video. We were going to, in our new buildings, we were going to mic people at the podium, certainly mic somebody in a 500-seat auditorium, and rather than in the old way where we would design classrooms that had speakers mounted at the front of the room and we would throw audio back, we mounted speakers in the ceiling, and we mounted mics in the ceiling for normal, what we thought at the time was normal academic use versus what we had done in the past. So those were there.
This is a great segue to the next question, which is this something that could be feasibly retrofitted into an older building? Now, you said you're doing this
in
some of your old buildings,
but
what you've described seems like might be a little challenging. Tell me about how that's going
to
work.
So to a user, it is, in the case of this, so we're retrofitting six classrooms in what we call our historic buildings.
The guy from the UK might not call it historic.
We're trying not to use the words, you know, old or outdated or outmodern. But imagine a classroom that was built in the 70s. So you see cinder block or you see brick and you see concrete waffled ceilings. That's what we're talking about.
Wow.
So buildings that aren't easy to go in and core ceiling or do things. So in those buildings, we're making very heavy use of wireless, which is what we would have seen today anyway. We're running 802.11n wireless, so that's a normal component. We're taking out a group study room to put in two racks that hold the media site or the other AV components that you would see in a normal classroom. We're mounting a camera, and the challenge then is, you know, feeding that stuff back to an AV control booth. We're purposely making a decision that we're going to run a few extra strands of fiber to connect these historic six classrooms back to the AV booth that I showed on the presentation. I mean, that's a choice we made.
Right.
But we think that while we're doing this, that we don't think that to not run the video feed back to our control booth is sort of like giving up to the concept that these are only going to be room-based lecture captures. If at any time somebody like our dean wanted to give a presentation in one of those buildings and wanted to get streamed, we would have had to come up with some alternate method if we didn't run 6 strands of fiber back to our control booth. So it's simple.
Can you elaborate a little bit more, Sean, on some of the considerations for implementing, even from scratch, a system in an older building?
Oh, either way, and very good juxtaposition. A lot of the considerations today, whether you're doing new construction, because like you intimated, a lot of people say, hey, is this something that only fits when you're doing new construction, when you have this opportunity that they had? And then some people say, is it impossible if you're retrofitting? And either way, getting your cameras, your audio, and taking the principles that Ed just said, which is, you know, if you can have a home run to a master control room for all of your different feeds, your audio, your projector sources, as I call them, and your cameras to a master control room, you can get that done in a retrofitted room so many different ways, and it increases the ease of doing that with each passing year. When you talk about the fact that Wi-Fi bandwidth has gotten to a point where you can utilize that technology to avoid pulling wires through terrible places, mm-hmm. it's not just for people with drop ceilings and, you know, modern buildings anymore. And so we find the considerations to be very similar, whether you're retrofitting or doing new construction.
Actually, you raised wireless, and that's a subject of another question here. Do you have any information on the wireless footprint related to streaming video in media site to mobile devices in a lecture?
I do. Every inch of this new building is covered in 802.11 wireless. And in one of the slides I showed a slide of our Davidson Winter Garden, and on a normal day, I took it when it was empty so you'd see more of the architecture. That room is filled. And that room is filled with students sitting there with laptops then, iPads probably today, and mobile devices. I showed another example of a group sitting down and using one of our conference desks that is sort of adjacent to the Winter Garden. And they're all down there working on a team project. And they're all working on wireless. So we're streaming this thing, again, on purpose. We're streaming video using wireless to mobile devices and to laptops everywhere in this facility.
I have a question here from a viewer. Says, what value do students find in having the video of, presenters, given that the camera is only showing a small screen of the actual presenter?
That's probably a good question. And so I'll answer it this way. I mean, there have been times when we've even thought about not including the talking head, because that's really not relevant. But I think it adds something to the presentation to see somebody talking mm-hmm. than to just see slides with audio. And I'm not quite sure I'm not good enough as a psychiatrist or whatever to know why that is. Mm-hmm. I just think you get a greater adoption if you can see somebody, a human, talking, even if you can't sort of make out.
And our internal research, backs up exactly what Ed says. I mean, we aren't doing psychological tests as a technology company, but we do focus groups. We can do it however we want. And we found that Rich Media, as Ed called it, that video plus slides was the most enduring combination of attention. That, you know, if you have audio plus slides, that holds attention a good amount of time, let's say, comparatively. The worst is video only. If the video is too small, people get distracted, they move away. You know, if it's video, it needs to be very large. But if you have video next to that which is being projected, video plus content, the size of the video can be reduced dramatically and still have the same retention results where people can watch for long periods of times of fatigue. So our surveying of students, you know, saying, hey, you like this one or that one, one or two, mm-hmm. Backs up exactly what Ed said.
Okay. Well, we're coming to the end of our time. And again, audience, if you have submitted your email address with your questions, we'll be sure to get you answers to those offline. But now it's time to bring our session to a close. So first, on behalf of University Business, I'd like to thank our speakers, Ed Adams from Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan and Sean Brown from Sonic Foundry. And thank you again to Sonic Foundry for its sponsorship and for providing us with access to this media site for this presentation, which is a nice change for us. I'd also like to thank the Ross School of Business for hosting us here today and for the work of its excellent media site crew. They've been great. Most of all, I'd like to thank you, our audience, for joining us. I hope you found today's web seminar to be informative. Delivering web seminars like this one is just part of our mission to inform college and university leaders about news and trends in higher ed management. And you'll find more coverage about issues such as the one we discussed today in the pages of our magazine, on our website, universitybusiness.com, and in our e-newsletter, UB Daily. And now we've come to the end of our program. For those in the audience who would like to review this webcast later, simply click the same link that brought you to the live program. If you'd like to share the presentation with other colleagues, just click on the envelope button in the lower right, and you can forward the presentation link to their email. And that's it for today's event. I'm J.D. Solomon for University Business on behalf of our speakers and technical crew. Thanks again for watching, and enjoy the rest of